Makeshift Stories is now available on Stitcher Radio on demand. Download the free mobile app today and listen to us anywhere, anytime. There's no more syncing, no downloading, and no wasted memory.
Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
In antiquity, divination most likely involved supernatural means, such as observing omens or interpreting a dream. But today, computers can, for example, accurately predict the time of sunrise at a specific location on a particular date in the future. But divining what will happen on that date as the sun rises into the sky, well, that's something else entirely. And like the weather, even when there is enough data to make a forecast, we can be utterly wrong. In this month's story, two friends find themselves on opposite sides of a prediction that, if correct, will be the opportunity to see a once-in-a-lifetime astronomical event. And if wrong, will spell disaster for the world. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Story 69, The Prediction. Somewhere in some time, even the right prediction might contain an unexpected surprise.
Alan, you can take the blindfold off now,
Gina anxiously whispered.
Why are you whispering? There's no one around for miles.
Alan sarcastically shot back as he removed an old greasy handcloth from his eyes. He hadn't bothered telling Gina that he could see under this stupid thing and knew exactly where they were.
Bug out rules,
Gina nervously said for the umpteenth time.
You know I'm taking a big risk. If Dad ever found out, he'd probably kick me out. But it was your idea,
Alan protested.
You finally wanted to show me your family's big secret, the one you've been dangling in front of my nose since we were kids. Or was it just an excuse to get me out here alone? It's the comet thing, Alan. It's got me spooked,
Gina finally admitted.
And now, with the unexpected course change...
Her voice trailed off to nothing.
Yeah, and you came rushing over during the news with some lame story about wanting to go to a movie. At least they bought the excuse,
Gina proudly declared.
Maybe, but I'm sure I caught them nudging each other as we left. They weren't that distracted by the news. My parents were already beginning to wonder if we've become a bit more than best friends. So are we?
Gina coyly asked.
Are we what?
Alan shot back, avoiding Gina's pointed question. He got out of the car and instinctively looked up into the darkening sky, where the recently discovered rogue comet, Lane Levy, hung deceptively still against the first stars of the night near the setting sun.
You know, Gina, it's hard to believe that it's going faster than a rocket. It doesn't look like it's moving at all. It's just hanging there. Still, even with the new course, it'll come no closer than 275,000 kilometers. And that's a very conservative prediction. The money's on more than 300, almost the distance to the moon. It'll be a great show, that's all.
Alan, that's what the government wants everyone to believe. They don't want us to know the truth. At least that's what Dad says.
Gina took Alan by his arm and steered him up an embankment on the uphill side of the deserted gravel road. Alan turned back to look at where they had hidden his parents' subcompact. Then through a clearing in the trees, noticed that he could see the whole town spread out beneath them.
You know comets have always been a bad omen,
Gina explained as she half-dragged Alan away from the road.
What's the rush, Gina?
Gina shrugged apologetically.
Let me guess, protocol, right?
Alan half-joked.
You don't want anyone to see us entering the woods.
Gina smiled.
Yes, you're catching on. Someday maybe I can get Dad to let you come on a bug-out practice with us.
Alan sighed. This was the part of Gina that he couldn't relate to. They walked along a rocky outcrop to hide their tracks, then in the fading light took their shoes off and waded down a creek for about 200 meters. The water was so cold, Alan thought he had lost feeling in his toes. Where the creek ran by the base of a cliff, Gina jumped out.
Up there,
she pointed to an overhang that looked no different than a half dozen others they had just passed.
Not easy to get to,
was all Alan could think to say.
That's the point. It took my family years to build and stock it. Part of it was originally a cave.
Alan grimaced. Noticing, Gina quickly added,
It's not a cave anymore. just as nice as your house on the inside. You'll be blown away when you see it.
Wondering what he had gotten himself into, Alan followed Gina up a well-hidden, narrow trail as she continued boasting about the construction of her family's bolt hole.
My dad discovered this place 15 years ago when he was helping to build the access road back there. It was originally just a coulee, but you wouldn't know it now. He found a cave at the far end, then came up here on a weekend, dumped a couple of large culverts in from the road construction, covered everything up, and convinced the foreman that the coulee was a great place to get rid of the rest of the earth from the road cut. Smart, huh? The cave just serves as an emergency exit now.
The path they had been walking along abruptly ended at a heavily camouflaged metal hatch. Gina pulled a fist-sized rock loose from the slope, revealing a small keypad behind it. Punched in a code, and the overbuilt entry obediently clicked open.
Come on,
Gina encouraged.
There's lights and everything, all solar-powered. The panels are hidden on the mesa above.
Alan stepped through the entrance into what could have been, except for the curved walls, a suburban living room. But before Gina could close the hatch, Alan backed up.
This is great, Gina, but it took a lot longer than I thought to get here. Thanks for showing me this, but we should get back.
Gina groaned.
You're kidding, right? No, my parents weren't so worried about the comet that they won't be checking the time. They should be worried,
Gina contradicted.
Alan, I won't be able to hang out with you this weekend. We've all got to help pack in supplies. This could be our last time alone.
Alan felt conflicted, but stood his ground.
I need more time to think this through. I still see you as my best friend.
Disappointed, Gina shot back.
Time's running out, Alan. This place is creeping me out, Gina. Let's go.
On the way back, Gina insisted on the useless blindfold again. He watched under the bottom edge as they wound their way back into town. Gina brooded as she concentrated on the road. Gina's family had moved in across the street about 12 years ago. They had always been the odd ones out in the neighborhood, friendly but distant and secretive. Their garage, which was supposed to be a workshop for Gina's father's part-time furniture building business, had always been a sore spot with the neighbors. Just a bit too noisy at odd hours, with too many comings and goings after dark. As the only other kid on the block, Gina had almost immediately become Alan's best friend. And she was the opposite of Alan in almost every way. Where he was cautious, she was recklessly bold. Where he was non-physical, she was aggressive, preferring rough and tumble play to more passive activities. But both were determined and smart, didn't follow the crowd, and had minds of their own, which made them both outsiders. Alan supposed that's why they had made their unlikely friendship work for all these years, and still did despite their recent awkwardness. But because of their age and the amount of time they spent together, people had started speculating about them. The sunset had burned down to a thin, glowing line of amber by the time they pulled into Alan's family's driveway. They both got out, but before either could speak, an impatient horn sounded across the street. They jumped and turned to see Gina's dad's camo-painted army surplus truck backed up to the garage's open door. "Hey, Gina," Gina's father impatiently yelled. "It's about time you got back. Your brother and I need your help." Gina turned to say goodnight to Alan. "Now," he yelled. "You can cop a kiss any other time. This is important." Embarrassed, Gina turned red and obediently crossed the street.
"What a jerk,"
Alan muttered under his breath. He knew that Gina planned to leave as soon as she had found her first full-time job. Feeling sorry for her, he climbed the stairs to his house and went in, finding his parents watching a news feature on the Lane Levy comet. "How was the movie?" "Dimitri," Alan's father turned and asked.
"We didn't go,"
he sheepishly admitted.
"Got there too late, so we just went for coffee." "That's a long time for coffee,"
Dolores, Alan's mother, noted with a wink. Outside, Alan heard the bumps and bangs of something heavy being loaded into the old truck across the street. Voices disagreeing, then the desperate coughs of a diesel engine starting. The ancient thing gnashed its gears, then roared off down the street, perfuming the neighborhood in burnt cooking oil. "An urgent late-night furniture delivery?" Dimitri joked. Alan decided to watch the end of the news show, so he sat down on the couch beside his mother as an ad came on. Dolores muted the TV.
"Alan, come sit on my good side. I want to be able to see you."
Alan's mother had been blinded in her left eye by a car accident when she was a teen. He moved to a chair beside the couch.
You didn't have to move that far,
Dolores warmly chided, turning so she could see her son with her good eye.
They say it's getting harder to predict the exact path, but probably it'll pass further away than they originally thought. Some new gas jets or something like that have started to erupt, pushing the thing around as it tumbles, so no one is exactly sure. Oh,
Alan grunted. There's nothing to worry about, his father interjected. It's so close now, only a week away. It'd take a lot more than a couple of feeble ice geysers to significantly alter its course before it gets here. But they say it'll be quite the show at closest approach. Noon, Wednesday now. The rumors are starting, though, Alan's father continued. All sorts of crazy things about the effects of it coming too close. The lunatic fringe is all stirred up about it. He nodded his head in the direction of Gina's house. Alan made a face. The next day, he saw the truck coming and going several times. Alan only caught glimpses of Gina as she helped to load what seemed like an endless stream of canvas bags. Sitting on the stairs, he caught her eye once as she helplessly shrugged. 2 days later, Gina showed up at the door. Alan noticed that the big truck was gone.
I've got an hour. Can you go for a walk?
She hopefully asked. They went almost a block before Gina finally spoke.
Dad's convinced now that the whole gas jet thing is just a ruse. He's really serious this time, and he's got me scared. Alan, I think your family should get ready just in case.
Alan sighed.
That'll never happen, Gina. My parents think anyone who believes in the rumors are paranoid conspiracy theorists, who think the New World Order is somehow controlling the comet. I'm sure they're not far off.
Gina's face turned red. Alan immediately regretted his last comment. This was a line that he and Gina had consciously tried not to cross. They turned around and walked back, making small talk, avoiding the subject. As Alan walked home from his part-time job at the local burger joint, Lane Levy was much brighter in the afternoon sky than anyone had predicted, making it easy for him to imagine that the horrible thing was coming straight at the Earth, instead of between the Earth and the Moon. The most recent rumor that had spread like wildfire on the net had spooked Alan, making Gina's earnest warning resonate in his mind. Pictures had been posted of alleged activity around old government Cold War-era nuclear bunkers. The posts claimed that they were being prepped for occupation. Government officials had been silent, which, as he could imagine Gina arguing, only confirmed their culpability. In an attempt to quell growing public concern, the mainstream media had been picking holes in the rumors, at times making fun of their proponents. Alan stopped for a moment.
If I don't look up,
he thought,
it's a perfect midsummer day.
Alan caught himself wondering how many more like it there might be. When Alan arrived at his house, instead of going in, on a whim, he crossed the street and knocked on Gina's door. There was no answer. He heard a noise in the backyard and walked around the side of the house. He found Gina methodically packing rain gear into a large plastic bag.
Gina,
Alan called. Surprised, Gina looked up and smiled.
Alan!
She dropped the bag and motioned him over to two lawn chairs.
They're saying no closer than 300,000 kilometers, maybe further,
Alan tentatively ventured.
There's been a bunch of stories on the net now about how this comet is different, that it's making intentional course adjustments, and has weird electromagnetic properties. The scientists have done a pretty good job of debunking most of it.
Alan hesitated, then continued.
But Gina, all those rumors about the bunkers? No one appears to be denying them, and that's got me worried.
Concern spread across Gina's face.
I was going to come over and see you as soon as I finished here. I'm not supposed to tell anyone, but we're bugging out tonight. Those rumors about the bunkers? The group my dad belongs to claims to have inside information and say it's true. And it's not just government, most of the wealthy, too. They're all scrambling to prep. We're calling them last-minuters.
She let her words hang in the air for a moment. Alan looked up to stare at the comet, now pinned like a brooch to the deep blue of the afternoon sky near the sun. Gina took his hand.
I asked if we could take you with us.
Her expression sagged.
My parents said no. Couldn't make an exception. Another body cuts down our total survival time. Maybe the bunkers are just rumors. You know me. I generally don't put much stock in what my dad's contacts say. We've bugged out a couple of times before, when his crazy group said there was going to be a crisis, and nothing happened. Maybe this will be the same.
Gina hopefully added.
Look, like I said before, just in case, get your parents to stock up on food and water and set up a place in your basement. That's at least something.
Alan was about to tell her that there was no chance of that ever happening when Gina's father drove up in the truck. Gina, he yelled from an open window, have you finished? We need to keep on schedule. He eyed Alan suspiciously. Gina reluctantly got up, and despite her father's laser glare, leaned over and defiantly kissed Alan, then picked up the bag she'd been stuffing and left Alan taken off guard, sitting on the lawn chair, unsure of how he really felt about the way his relationship with Gina was changing, and not sure what to believe about the comet. Despite the fact that many people had taken the day off as an unofficial vacation, a spontaneous day of celebration, or commiseration depending on what you believed, Alan's parents had decided to ignore the hype and go to work, and that left Alan by himself to face the closest approach of Lane Levy. In the late morning, he found himself sitting transfixed on the front stairs, shivering with anticipation. Alan wore sunglasses with a welding filter duct taped over the lens, as the authorities had advised. The comet was now too close to the sun and too bright to watch without protective gear. Alan lifted his glasses to see his watch.
11:15,
he noted.
Still almost 3/4 of an hour, if they're telling the truth,
he mumbled to himself, then decided to go for a drink of water. Alan was almost to the kitchen when he heard a car with a worn-out muffler pull up in front of the house. Its gasping motor died, then a door creaked and slammed shut. A few seconds later, the doorbell rang.
Alan?
A familiar voice called through the glass. Alan's heart jumped and he ran to the front door, opened it, and found Gina.
If the thing is gonna hit, then I want to be with you when it does.
Hands on hip, she defiantly stated. Surprised, Alan involuntarily stepped back into the house.
How do you get here? He asked. In that.
Gina pointed to an old, beat-up, rusty station wagon parked partly on the sidewalk.
Our backup vehicle. Dad hid it about 2 miles from the bolt hole years ago. But I've done it now. Abandoning the bolt hole is... well, it's not good. I'm on my own from here on in. But...
Alan stammered.
Aren't you scared of being incinerated or killed by rampaging zombie survivors?
Gina ignored the jab and shrugged.
I wasn't sure that I wanted to spend the next 10 years hiding in an old buried culvert. I started thinking about what it'd be like when we finally came out. About the kind of people who'd be left. About what the world would be like. And knew I'd rather stay here with you. Even for a few more hours. About 40 minutes now,
Alan tried to joke.
And we've got front row seats on the doorstep. I even kludged together an extra pair of protective lenses.
Gina smiled and grabbed the makeshift eyewear from a table near the door.
Just for me? You knew that I'd come back, didn't you? That's so sweet, Alan.
By the time they settled down on the stairs, Alan noticed that the comet was rapidly closing on the sun.
No one ever mentioned that it would eclipse,
he whispered.
It looks like it's going to hit, doesn't it?
Through the protective lenses, the world irised down around them and fell away into darkness. Only the globe of the sun and the menacing ice cream cone of the comet remained, isolated in a black void. Lane Levy inched relentlessly towards the sun. Then it suddenly seemed to leap forward, shoving its fat head into the helpless disk of Sol. When the two touched, everything seemed to momentarily wink out. Then the comet reappeared, emerging from the other side of the now angry-looking star and moved away into the darkness.
What was that? Did you see it, Gina?
Gina had taken her glasses off and was rubbing her eyes.
Yeah, I think I did. Everything went black for a second. Guess it could have been a cloud or something.
Alan pulled his glasses off to interrogate the sky. It was perfectly clear, perfectly blue. He looked down to check the time on his phone.
12:25.
He said aloud.
Closest approach is over,
Alan smiled.
False alarm. Your father's got to take that into consideration.
Gina ignored the comment.
12:25?
She distractedly repeated.
I didn't think that we were staring at it for 25 minutes. Seemed more like 3 or 4. I didn't check the time before we started watching. I don't know. Maybe the comet was already past closest approach when it eclipsed the sun. Hey. Let's go in. There's a live netcast. Maybe they'll mention the blackout thing.
Alan cheerfully suggested. By the time Alan's computer had booted up and he had connected to the live stream, they found themselves looking at a large square filled with people celebrating. The title under the video read, "Lane Levy is now heading back into space." An off-camera voice was excitedly clamoring,
"What a spectacular show. Even the boffins got this one wrong. None of them predicted that Lane Levy would eclipse the sun. They're all scrambling for an explanation."
Gina and Alan spent the rest of the afternoon watching net and TV newscasts of the viral celebration that had spontaneously erupted across the globe. There were many with impromptu interviews of dumbfounded scientists struggling to explain the last-minute course change, but there was no mention of the sun and comet briefly winking out. However, as the day edged into evening, a few newscasters began to notice the absence of comments from senior government, industry officials, and prominent doomsday personalities. Gina, her euphoria switching to concern, checked the net sites her father always followed and found them strangely quiet.
"Alan,"
she poked at his shoulder.
"Come, look at this. That's weird. My dad's group, they all had hardened net connections. They would keep posting as long as they could. But there's nothing. Maybe I should go out there and check. They might not know it's safe to come out. Will you come with me?"
The old station wagon belched greasy black exhaust as it struggled up out of the valley along the gravel access road. This time Gina hadn't bothered to blindfold Alan. They neared the top of the ridge, Gina pulled into a hidden side road, then jammed on the brakes, almost hitting the rear of an army surplus vehicle. She jumped out and peered under the oily canvas that covered the back of the truck.
"Empty,"
she exclaimed.
"Must mean that they're still up there, or they would have started packing stuff out."
Alan had to jog to keep up with Gina as she snaked her way along the trail, through the creek, then up the side of the steep, rocky slope. He was several meters behind her when he heard her call out,
"Dad? Mom? Are you here?"
Alan rounded the corner and found her standing in front of the open hatch to the bolt hole. She turned as he approached.
"It was open when I got here,"
Gina explained in a panicked voice.
"There's no one inside. Maybe they went to the top of the bluff to watch the comet going away?"
Alan hopefully suggested.
"They'd never leave the hatch open." "Maybe some of your dad's friends came, or maybe they went to look for you,"
Alan tried. Now looking stricken, Gina explained,
"That's not the way it works, Alan. First, no one knows where anyone else's bolt hole is, and second, if you leave like I did, you're considered rogue. They won't look for you, and they won't let you back in. The truck's here, and that was their only way out."
After searching the top of the mesa and the surrounding scrub brush until the sun began to set, Gina finally gave up and agreed to drive back with Alan. As they bounced down the road, Alan tried to placate Gina's growing anxiety.
"Look, give it a couple more hours. They might even be at your house right now,"
he suggested.
"Your dad may have decided to toughen everyone up with a march back to town. I'm sure they're okay. You know your dad. He's prepared for anything."
However, when they pulled into the street and parked, lights shone through the windows of every house, casting distorted squares of yellow on the lawns, with one dark conspicuous exception, Gina's house. It stood abandoned in the creeping murk of the dusk.
"They're not there,"
panicked, Gina proclaimed, then ran across the street. Alan slowly followed behind, finally acknowledging that she was right.
"Gina,"
he yelled,
"come back. There's nothing more you can do. Let's go to my place. We'll file a missing persons report."
Gina emerged from the shadows.
"Nothing. Not even a note,"
she tearfully exclaimed. They walked together in tense silence to Alan's house. When they opened the front door and let themselves in, they were confronted with the deep voice of a news announcer.
"There is no official explanation. Stories from around the world have been flooding in, suggesting that high-level officials and leaders who took shelter as a precaution have gone missing. Here at home, rumors have been spreading that the mysterious phenomena appears to have affected anyone who hid. In a related story, news services are beginning to receive wild claims of miraculous cures."
The volume on the TV was suddenly turned down.
"No!"
Gina gasped. "Alan? Gina? Is that you?" Alan's parents called from the living room.
"There in a minute,"
Alan called back.
"They're just rumors. It'll be okay. You'll see,"
he whispered reassuringly to Gina. As they entered the living room, Alan's mother got up and turned to greet them with a huge smile.
"My eye,"
she laughed.
"I don't understand how, but I can see."
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Story 69, Somewhere, Sometime, The Prediction. We hope that you enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we are doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on iTunes. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The story was read by Mitchell, too. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David Hume. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.